They might both have the same origin. Don't flatter yourself that you're the first to have had that thought. No, I wouldn't dream of it. I scraped sweat from my brow, already feeling like I'd been in a sauna for an hour. But you have to admit the point is valid. I wouldn't know. I don't profess any great interest in the matter. Not even when the fate of the city might depend on it. Except it wouldn't, would it? A few thousand post-mortals, 10 at the most. Dream fuel may be a precious substance to those who've acquired a dependence on it, but for the majority, it's of no consequence whatsoever. Let them die. See if I care. In a few centuries, everything that's happened here will be little more than a historical footnote. I, meanwhile, have considerably larger and more ambitious fish to fry. Quirrenbach adjusted some more controls, tapping a gauge here and there. But then I'm an artist. All this is mere diversion. You, on the other hand... I confess I really don't understand you, Tanner. Yes, you may now have some obligation to Tarin, but your interest in dream fuel was apparent from the moment we searched Dvadim's cabin. By your own admission, you came here to murder Argent Ryvich, not to sort out a minor supply shortage in our sordid little drugs industry. Things became a little more complicated, that's all. And? There's something about dream fuel, Quirrenbach. Something that makes me think I've seen it before. But there was a way in. Sky, Norquinko, and Gomez located it by undocking and scouting around the ship for another 30 minutes, until they found the hole that Oliveira and Largo must have used to get inside. It was only a few tens of meters from where Oliveira's shuttle was parked, near the point where the spine connected to the rest of the ship. It was so small that Sky had missed it completely on the first pass, lost as it was amongst the blister-like protuberances on the ship's ruined side. "I think we should go back," Gomez said. "We're going in. Didn't you listen to a word of what Oliveira said to us? And doesn't it worry you in the slightest that this ship appears to be made of something strange, that it looks like a crude attempt at copying one of our ships? It worries me, yes. It also makes me even more determined to get inside. Largo went inside as well. Well, I guess we'll just have to keep a lookout for him, won't we?" Sky was ready now. He had not bothered removing his helmet since the last time he had gone through the airlock. "I also want to see what's inside," Norquinko said. "One of us at least should stay aboard the shuttle," Gomez said. "If the ship that swept us with the radar gets here in the next few hours, it would be good to have someone ready to do something about it." "Fine," said Sky. "You just volunteered for the job." "I didn't mean..." "I don't care what you meant. Just accept it. If Norquinko and I run into anything that needs your input, you'll be the first to know." They left the shuttle, using thruster harnesses to cross the short distance to the Caliuche's hull. When they landed near the hole, it was like touching down on a softly yielding mattress. They stood up, gripped to the ship by the adhesive soles of their shoes. There was an obvious and vital question that Sky had almost managed not to ask himself, but now it must be dealt with. There was no way in his experience that the hull of a ship could be transmuted to this sponge-like state. Metal simply did not do that by itself, even if it had been exposed to the glare of an antimatter explosion. No, whatever had happened here was far beyond his experience. It was as if the ghost ship's hull had been replaced, atom by atom, by some new and disturbingly pliant substance which replicated the old details in only the broadest terms. There was shape and texture and color, but no function, like a crude cast of the original ship. Was he even standing on the Caliuche, or was that just another flawed assumption? Sky and Norquinko